You are now listening to Accidental Intrigue, Tales of Travel and Mystery, written by Kent Babin and narrated by Remington Cooney. Episode 1, A South African in Uzbekistan, Part 1. March 2012. There comes a time in every spy's life when, in a restaurant deep in the bowels of an Uzbek bazaar, he finds out via a handwritten message, accompanying his plate of pork kebab, no less, that he has been made. "You've got company," the note read. "Proceed to fallback location." Gary instinctively looked around, wondering which of the four other patrons could be considered company. Two were engrossed in a game of chess, and had been since the moment he'd walked in. Another, an old woman, hair wrapped in a silk scarf, sipped at her tea. The final candidate, a man covered in the grease of used car parts, chomped ravenously on a grilled pork chop. "Not exactly your typical counterintelligence operatives, yeah?" he thought to himself. To them, Jerry must have looked like every other white tourist who went looking for pork in the semi-autonomous Republic of Karakalpakstan, a large part of western Uzbekistan that included the regional capital Nukus, the city in which he now found himself. And like all tourists, he had entered the city's central bazaar, camera in hand, snapping pictures of everything in sight. He ignored the offers of the black market currency traders with their duffel bags of cash, meandered through the food section with its piles of dried fruit and nuts, freshly baked sambusek, and delicious beef and lamb kebabs, until finally reaching the area selling used car parts. Smoke emanating from a chimney pointed him in the direction of a little hole in the wall selling the city's best and only pork kebab. It was here that he was supposed to meet his contact. Well, until he grew a tail. But first, let's back up a step and introduce our intrepid Gary. His South African parents gave him the name Gerhardt, but he preferred Gary. "A hell of a lot easier that way, yeah," he would tell people. His dad, may he rest in anguish, had followed his country's great mercenary tradition, fighting other people's unjust wars in Angola, Mozambique, and the Congo. His mum, a farmer through and through, rarely left home, finding more comfort instead with the goats, sheep, and cattle that they subsisted on. Presented with these two seemingly polar opposite lifestyles, Gary chose a different path, which also happened to be one of South Africa's other great traditions, industrial espionage. "You could call it the gentleman's side of the mercenary business," Gary remembered telling one of his dad's skeptical mercenary friends shortly after being hired. "Italian suits instead of camo, Mont Blanc pens instead of AK-47s. Wear the velvet glove to your iron fist." After hating every second of a 4-year business degree, how could he resist a life of doing morally corrupt things for morally corrupt people? Not that anyone knew what he did. To them, he was just an ordinary insurance salesman hawking cut-rate policies to old white farmers. An honest gig, in other words. Had they known his real job, their opinion of him would probably change. His dad always liked to say, "Son, those people sitting in armchairs should keep their opinions to themselves." It was perhaps the one thing they had agreed upon. It was only last week that the travel arrangements came down the pipe. Cape Town to Tashkent, with a layover in Istanbul, and then overland to Nukus. The mission: pass stolen information to the leader of the Karakalpakstani independence movement. From whom the information was stolen was not Gary's concern, nor did he care what the leader did with it. He was just the messenger. To no one's surprise, his dad had something to say about messengers as well. "Listen, son, messengers were put on this earth to be shot, yeah? Why else would they need an expression to keep people from shooting them?" 48 hours later, after a night in Tashkent and a bumpy overnight train ride to the western city of Ugench, he arrived in the industrial city of Nukus. A former munitions manufacturing center, a tourist like the one he was pretending to be, only had two reasons to go there. The first was the most incongruous art museum, housing Soviet-era avant-garde art that had been collected and preserved through no small feat of heroism by Igor Savitsky, a Ukraine-born Russian artist. The second was the city's location as a staging area for trips to Moynakh, a town on the former shore of the Aral Sea. He checked into a small guest house behind the art museum. After a shower and a nap, the clerk pointed him to a nearby restaurant serving up plov, the local specialty of roasted lamb, carrots, and rice made in a cauldron. The trick, he was told, was to cook the vegetables and rice in lamb fat. When it comes to food, Uzbeks know what they're doing. In the morning, he breakfasted on eggs, bread, jam, and tea, and then spent a few hours reading a science fiction novel borrowed from the guesthouse library. A knock on the door startled him. It was the clerk. She had a message. Be at the pork kebab restaurant in the bazaar in 2 hours. He left the guesthouse and took in the city in the way that any tourist would do. It wasn't much to look at. An abandoned hotel, the tallest structure in the city, jutted out of the ground like some decrepit finger. Behind it, the arched gate of the central bazaar. A few blocks away sat the unassuming Museum of Art. Small white vans plied the road bisecting the city, stopping every so often to pick up and drop off passengers. Crossing it was the stuff of adrenaline junkies. Right, he thought to himself, the road separating him from the bazaar's entrance. It's just like crossing the N2 back in Cape Town, yeah? Piece of cake. Gary stared at the note. What a mess this was turning out to be. At least the pork was delicious. But then, pork always tasted better in places you didn't expect to find it. He couldn't quite believe that someone knew enough about him to care what he was up to. Whoever it was surely knew where he was staying, so there wasn't much point in trying to sneak out of the bazaar unnoticed. That would just make things worse. At some point, he would need to identify the tail so he would know whom to shake the next day on his way to the fallback location, the Museum of Art. It took an hour, but Gary finally caught sight of the tail after crossing the main street. The poor guy looked so out of place playing a real-life game of Frogger trying to keep up. They made eye contact for a brief moment before Gary turned and headed back to the guest house. The next morning, a different guy was loitering about on the street near Gary's guest house. The art museum was only a couple of 100 meters away, but Gary took the street heading back towards the bazaar instead. The natural chaos of a market seemed the perfect place to lose a tail.
Why are you late?
His contact, a portly Russian-looking woman in her mid-50s, scolded him. It took me longer than expected to unencumber myself. She shook her head.
Uzbek state security. Ugh, cretins.
Right. Let me ask you this. How many were there yesterday?
One followed you into the bazaar, and another followed you out. Understand?
Gary nodded. They were standing in front of a painting by Mikhail Kurzin, entitled Capital. A decidedly unattractive man and woman, from the shoulders up, decked out in the formal dress of a previous century, stared back at them, squinting. In the background, a collage of workers performed manual labor.
Did you know Kurzin did time in Kolyma for this work? This was prize for portraying Soviet citizens as ugly.
Gary feigned interest. Is it the same for the other artist here? Did they all end up in the gulag?
More or less. They dared to produce illegal art and paid for it. It's a miracle that this work still exists.
They moved on to another painting. This one depicted Moynakh as the thriving fishing village on the shores of the Aral Sea that it once was. She handed him a folded piece of paper. There was a name, a town, a meeting point, and a code word written in black ink. Ruslan, Moynakh, the abandoned fish cannery, and Moskvich.
Tomorrow, 2 p.m.
She snatched at the paper and walked away. There was no sign of his tales on the sidewalk outside the guest house. Odd, he thought to himself. Things soon became clear only after he opened the unlocked door to his room and found an older man dressed in a navy blue tunic occupying the room's only chair. His large parade visor hat hung from the coat rack.
My name is Colonel Ivanov, Uzbek State Security Service. Please, sit down, he said in the formal accent of the Soviet elite.
Gary complied. It didn't pay to act indignant or surprised. This was Uzbekistan. Last he checked, they still boiled prisoners alive. Ivanov held Gary's passport in his hands.
Mr. Gerhard van Jarlsveld, he said,
trying the name on for size and predictably mispronouncing it.
Yeah, Gary said. Can I ask you what this is about? Have I done something wrong?
What are you doing in Uzbekistan, please?
Tourism, yeah? I've always wanted to see the great cities of Samarkand and Bukhara, but also the lesser-known places like Nukus. Not so many munitions factories back in Cape Town, you can be sure of that one, huh? Or Vanishing Lakes, for that matter. Cape Town is a fantastic place, but you know, it gets boring quickly.
His answer was met with raised eyebrows while Ivanov flipped through the passport again.
So many stamps. One wonders what you do for a living, Mr. van Jarlsveld.
There was no answer that didn't sound entitled, so Gary kept quiet until Ivanov was done looking. No doubt he had already been through the passport 3 times. He'd come to his point eventually.
And what is your next destination?
Now, here Gary had a choice. He could be honest, like any tourist would be, or he could lie and hope that he could skip town unnoticed. Both options presented problems. If he told the truth, they'd follow him to Moynakh. If the town was as small as it sounded, there was nowhere to hide. And if he lied, and they were still able to figure out his destination, then they'd know he was up to something.
Right, I'll head back to Urgench, and then on to Kiva. I've heard good things about Kiva, he said,
realizing that if he was ever going to pass on the information, he needed Uzbek state security to think he was somewhere else.
Tell me, what is your hotel in Urgench?
Gary shrugged.
I don't know yet. I'll find a place when I get there, yeah?
Ivanov didn't look impressed. His face seemed to say, who doesn't book their accommodation in advance? He had reached the end of his line of questioning, though, because he got up and he handed the passport back.
Have a pleasant trip, Mr. van Jarlsveld.
Gary watched Ivanov put on his hat, adjust it in the mirror, and then take his leave.
Yeah, that could have gone a hell of a lot worse, yeah?
With Ivanov gone, he started planning. Getting to Moynakh wasn't going to be difficult. There was always a taxi driver willing to take him for the right price. It was sneaking out unnoticed that was the challenge. He would have to leave in the middle of the night to evade capture. If Ivanov caught him, he didn't want to think of the unspeakable horrors that awaited him. He decided to pay for another night at the guest house, if only to make his absence during the day look less sinister. It would also give him the option of returning to Nukus, in case things didn't go as scheduled in Moynakh. For dinner, Gary headed to the bazaar and followed his nose until he arrived at an open-air cafe grilling up kebabs. He took a seat on a plastic chair and mimed his order to a confused waitress. He spoke 4 languages. Russian was not one of them, let alone Uzbek. Eventually, he got what he wanted, and what everyone else around him also happened to be eating. A pile of small skewers of spiced ground lamb, a flatbread that looked like a thick pizza crust without toppings, and onions. An old vodka bottle filled with vinegar, garlic, and chili peppers was the only condiment. 30 meters away, Gary could see his tail loitering next to a spice vendor. With the moon high in the sky, Gary peeked outside his window to see the street devoid of life. He walked the deserted, poorly lit route to the bazaar. A handful of taxis were parked near the now quiet minibus loop out front. He approached and tapped on the window of one of the taxis to rouse the slumbering driver. The man woke with a start, but eventually rolled down his window. Gary flashed him a couple of $100 bills to get his attention. Like any working-class Uzbek, access to American dollars was made difficult by the country's exchange controls. Foreigners could get dollars by handing over a Visa card at a specific branch of a specific bank in large cities, but not ordinary Uzbeks. The reason dollars were so valuable was because a black market existed that paid a 30% premium over the official exchange rate. The two bills did the trick, and after a quick stop for petrol, they were on the road to Moynak. The driver, a middle-aged man with a mustache, had the radio station tuned to what Gary figured was Russian pop music. Every once in a while, he tried to speak to Gary in the same language, without any luck. It was light by the time they reached Moynak. The driver stopped in front of the town's bazaar. There was already activity under the covered structure, just not a lot of produce. Gary got out and looked around. The road continued north, presumably to where the RLC once was. There wasn't much else going on. A few old Soviet-era cars came and went, picking up and dropping off people like some sort of informal taxi service. The driver seemed anxious to leave, so Gary handed him the bills and started walking north. He needed to locate the old fish cannery before the meeting. An old Moskvich car, its music blaring, pulled up alongside him. "Where do you go, friend?" the young guy said out of his window. I'm trying to get to the old fish cannery. Can you help me find it, ya?" The old car shuddered as it was put into gear. The driver opened up the glove box and said, "Put the money there." Gary looked in and saw that it was already full of 200-some notes, about 10 cents at black market rates. He dug in his pocket for one and dropped it in. Within a couple of minutes, they had rounded a bend and pulled up in front of a clearly abandoned structure surrounded by a fence. "Fish factory there," the driver pointed to the left. "Korean food over there," he added, pointing off to the right. Gary wasn't about to ask why there'd be Korean food in a place like this, so he thanked the driver and he got out of the car. The cannery was big. Multiple buildings, all totally abandoned. Few windows remained intact. Seemed as good a place as any for a clandestine meeting. When he turned back, the old car had already disappeared around the bend. There was no one else in sight. His escape must have gone unnoticed, or at least for now. He had some time to kill, so he did what any tourist in Moynak would do. Visit the abandoned, rusted-out ships on the seabed of the former RLC. In some circles, the ships were an iconic sight, ominously illustrating the Soviet Union's ecological doctrine. The RLC was but one of the victims, sucked dry of its saline water to feed a cotton industry that had no economic or ethical reason to exist. To this day, the government still requisitioned free labor from schools, ministries, and industries to harvest the cotton. Moynak had suffered perhaps the most from the sea's demise. A once thriving fishing town replete with the region's largest fish cannery, it had been reduced to a shell of its former self. There were few jobs. Hope for the Aral's return diminished with each passing year. Gary lunched at the Korean restaurant, indeed a treat in such a remote part of the world. The proprietor, a woman of indeterminate age, explained that she had been forcibly relocated from the Soviet Far East with her parents prior to the Second World War. She was just one of the 172,000 or so that were relocated to the Uzbek SSR and the Kazakh SSR, supposedly to combat the infiltration of Japanese espionage. In a cruel twist of irony, she said, the reason her grandparents had fled Korea in the first place back in 1883 was to escape the tyranny of the Korean regime. Excusing himself, he left a generous tip and headed towards the fish cannery for the meeting. You have been listening to Accidental Intrigue, Tales of Travel and Mystery, written by Kent Babin and narrated by Remington Cooney.